This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. Wisconsin is currently facing a massive spike in coronavirus cases. The state continues to break daily records of confirmed cases. Our death toll reached more than 1,600 people this week, and hospitalizations have more than tripled in the last month. In the meantime, there are a number of COVID-19 vaccine trials taking place around the world, including here in Wisconsin, as scientists work tirelessly to develop a vaccine to help fight the spread of the disease. As this vaccine is getting fast-tracked, questions about liability if something goes wrong have come into focus. The Countermeasures Injury Compensation Program is run by an agency under the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. It's been designated to handle any issues with a COVID-19 vaccine. But some say this program isn't adequate for this vaccine. Instead, patient advocates say compensation for vaccine injury should go through the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, also known as Vaccine Court. Each program has different sources of funding, and both are relatively unknown and underutilized by the public. To help break down the many questions surrounding vaccine liability, Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski is joined by Milwaukee attorney John Groth.
So to start, you know, the question that's at the top of my mind, and I'm sure many listeners amid the development for a COVID-19 vaccine, is there such a thing as liability in a vaccination when you agree to be part of a trial?
That's a fantastic question. So let's say yes is the answer. And I'm saying that with some hesitation because I'm a lawyer and that's what we do, is it depends. So in a vaccine trial, what you're doing is you're volunteering, right, to go and take part of a vaccine trial. You know, and there are a number of them at UW as we speak, as we sit here. What the federal government recommends, they don't require, but what they recommend is that in the documents that you fill out when you're taking part or when you're getting ready to take part of the trial, that those documents say what you can get if you're injured, okay? And some of these will talk about that you'll get medical care, for example, if you're injured because of the vaccine trial. Others will say that you'll get anything limited to what's in the obvious risks or the, I guess I'll call it a schedule for what might happen as a result of the vaccine trial. So they'll limit it further. Other than that, probably not much. You can't get much from being in a vaccine trial. The limit is to what you're contracting with the vaccine trial, you know, if it's UW or whomever, what you sign and what you contract for.
So when it comes to vaccine liability for vaccines that are approved and distributed widely, where do drug companies stand?
Oh boy, do you have hours to talk about this? So let's go back to the 1980s, okay? So in the 1980s, there was a law that was passed because they wanted to experiment, I guess is what I'll say. And let me go back even further, you know, take this to Wisconsin, Fighting Bob La Follette. Hopefully your listeners know who Fighting Bob was, a very progressive person. Back in his day, back in the early 1900s, Wisconsin was on the forefront of a no-fault system for workers' compensation. And there was a grand compromise that, you know, before this, people didn't have any compensation. If you're injured on the job, well, you get fired. Sorry, you can't do your job, you're fired. So they changed that and for good reason, obviously. And so people, when they're on the job, they don't have to show whose fault it was. They simply have to show they were on the job and they were injured. And then there's a schedule. There are booklets that we have in the office here that we give the people that say, okay, this is what, in essence, what the pinky finger is worth. This is what your shoulder is worth. This is what your back is, you know, those kind of things. It's based on a schedule. That's very similar to the compromise, the experiment that took place in the 1980s with vaccine law. So with vaccine law, they said, we're going to try a no-fault system. And let me go on another tangent here. I apologize. But it's important nowadays when you're talking about, you know, Trump and Biden and the election, because there's been some talk of tort reform. And during every election, it seems that people talk about tort reform and what the president's going to do with appointing judges for activist judges and tort reform and things like that. Well, this was an experiment in tort reform in the 1980s, and it worked. I think it works. I think many people will agree that it works.
So what is tort reform for listeners who may not know?
So tort reform is trying to protect and have the balance between going to court for really any reason. You know, for example, the easiest explanation is suing a doctor for anything. So that's tort reform, is that you try to protect certain parts of society, protect doctors, protect manufacturers so we can keep jobs, so we can keep doctors, things like that. So it makes it harder to find your day in court. So for vaccines, what they said was you can try to have a system where you're suing vaccine manufacturers every single time over every single vaccine, but that's going to be extremely expensive for these for these vaccine manufacturers, extremely expensive for the victims, and it's going to have a lot of inconsistencies and a lot of unknowns. So they said, let's do this, where we're going to have a program set up that's going to be funded by a tax on, or a fee paid by the vaccine manufacturers for every vaccine that's administered. So I believe it's 75 cents per vaccine, and that money goes into this fund. And if you can show that you have an injury on this schedule, and I have a schedule right here, if you can show that you have an injury that's on this schedule within a certain period of time related to this vaccine, that's all you have to show, you'll get compensation. There's billions upon billions of dollars that's in this fund. So it's been building over time, and they haven't paid out, because there have not been that many claims historically. There's in the thousands potentially per year, as opposed to other kind of claims for medical malpractice or for car accidents and those kind of injury claims. So there are fewer claims occurring, and I think in part because people don't know about this very unique system. This is such a unique federal national vaccine injury compensation system that they're just not used to it. So people don't know, number one, if they go to a lawyer, the lawyer doesn't know about it. And number two, if you go online, it's not the easiest thing to figure out how to do.
So basically, the U.S. system shifts liability for vaccines to the government, shielding drug makers, because basically they ruled that widespread inoculation against disease is considered a benefit to society. And you mentioned the 1980s, and that's when the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act requires that vaccines be both, quote, safe and effective. So you mentioned it's only in the thousands that these claims are filed. I don't believe that there's any claims made against the COVID trials right now because it's a little too new. But statistically, it's pretty rare if you get injured via vaccine. But if this does happen, what options does someone initially have? How do you file a claim? You mentioned it's these unique government agencies that many people don't know about. So to break it down for listeners, we have the Countermeasures Injury Compensation Program, which is run by the Department of Health and Human Services. And this has been designed to handle any issues with a COVID-19 vaccine.
Correct. And they have a lot of protection. The Countermeasures Injury Compensation Program and the Public Readiness Emergency Preparedness Act, I guess those are things that came about just, I guess, somewhat recently, in that they're trying to figure out how to protect people since really 9/11, right? And having emergency measures in place and saying there's a national emergency. With SARS or the swine flu or things like that. It goes back to those days. There's a big difference between the Countermeasures Injury Compensation Program and the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, because the countermeasures is obviously, as you can imagine, it's more stringent because it's riskier because there's an emergency. So you have to do things faster, which obviously at COVID, there's a rocket docket here trying to get things going. Obviously, everybody is looking at, well, if they're doing it so fast, maybe they're not being as thorough as they should. So the countermeasure to that is the Public Readiness Emergency Preparedness Act that says that if you're injured, really, there's a lot more immunity for drug manufacturers. So when you're talking about COVID-19 and those kind of vaccinations and the trials, if you're looking for compensation from anything related to the PREP Act and the Countermeasures Injury Compensation Program, it's going to be pretty darn difficult. And just let me tell you this, too, with the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, for like the flu vaccine, for example, you're going to get the help of an attorney to guide you through the system. With the Countermeasures Injury Compensation Program, because that does not pay for experts, for costs, for getting medical records, it doesn't pay for an attorney, you're going to have a hard time because you're going to have to pay out of your own pocket. The ability to get into the courtroom doors on this is affected simply because of the way the system's set up.
Right. And with the CICP, is a major factor of the difficulty in, you know, quote, having a successful suit with them, you know, you have to prove that a drug maker acted with willful misconduct. And, you know, is that nearly impossible in many cases?
I think nearly impossible is pretty accurate. And if you mean a 0.001% chance, I think that's pretty darn close. I mean, you look at any kind of litigation that we're involved in on a national scale, you know, like for like Zantac, for example, showing that there was something in the drug itself that was a carcinogen, that simply by putting it into your body, you're gonna introduce a carcinogen into your body. That's very rare. I believe that drug manufacturers are doing whatever they can, knowing that they can only get held liable for willful misconduct and such, that they're gonna have good lawyers to instruct them that they'll do things in a manner that's gonna protect them ultimately. I can tell you, this is all scary stuff. I don't wanna get COVID. I don't want anybody to get COVID. And I wanna have some normalcy, right? I wanna get back to normal. What's that gonna mean? I know that there are some big insurance companies in the area who said we won't go back to normal and have people back in the office until there's a vaccine.
Right, so that brings up one of my other questions is when the vaccine does become widely available and approved, you know, it's in trial stages right now throughout the world. There's thousands of trials going on right now. Can either the government or perhaps, as you mentioned, your insurance company or your employer, can they force people to get vaccinated or impose restrictions on your activities if you haven't been vaccinated? You know, you gave the example of like, you need to be vaccinated before everyone can return to the office. Say that's one stance that is going to possibly occur down the road. Is this a future concern? And is there legal stance to this? Is that possible?
Well, you have to keep lawyers busy somehow, right? And this is one of those ways. So I say it's similar to when you get into your car and you have to have a license and your license has certain requirements on it. You know, maybe a doctor knows that you can only drive in the daylight, for example, and then you have a limitation on your license to only drive in the daylight, you know, things like that. So the government is able to require you to abide by certain standards. And if you don't want to abide by those standards, then you don't do that activity. So you have to find something else to do. You know, you don't have to drive a car. I think there's some similarity there. If you're epileptic and you have seizures on a regular basis and you don't take your medicine, the DMV can take away your license, or they can prevent you from even having a license in the first place. That is, I think, a similar situation where employers will be able to say, you don't have to work for us. You know, I think it's going to have some gray area where in Wisconsin, there's two exemptions you can claim for having vaccines, a religious exemption and a philosophical exemption. Now, there was a representative, I think Heinz is how you pronounce his name, up in Oshkosh. He said earlier this year that he was introducing a bill to remove the philosophical exemption from vaccines. So the only exemption would be a religious exemption. So I think this is something that we're going to talk about a lot over these next few months. What exemptions are people going to have when an employer says you either get this vaccine or you can't come back to work? You know, going back to just the basic tenets of employment law in Wisconsin, we're an at-will state. So an employer can fire you for any reason just as long as it's not a bad reason, you know, for religion, sexual orientation, you know, things like that, ethnicity, you know, so they could also fire you and then not rehire you, or fire you and say, I'm only going to rehire you if you get a vaccine. And I think that would be allowed. Now, don't quote me on that one, because I think the law is so gray. And I think we're going to have so many fights over this that my friends who are employment lawyers are going to probably have many sleepless nights in the next few months to years. But it's a very interesting thing to talk about.
Right. And, you know, this is coming to light. And as you mentioned, we'll continue to perhaps get more attention as the pandemic continues. And with programs like the Countermeasures Injury Compensation Program and the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, you know, they differ so much. Do you think these programs ultimately help or harm people based on their, quote, success rate?
Well, with the, boy, that's a fantastic question. I wish I was a philosophy major. I think the plan is, and the goal is to help people. And I think in general, vaccines help people. And I think that's to the point where we have laws in place that kids have to get vaccinated to go to school. So I think it's a helpful thing. I think it's very interesting that with all the talk now about getting vaccinated, the number of flu vaccines that are out there to be administered are, I think the last numbers were 90 million or something along those lines. So there's a lot. And now you have everybody getting into the vaccination system. So I think in general, the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program is a good thing. It's underutilized. I think doctors don't know that there are injuries related to vaccine administration. So I think that's good. I think the countermeasures program is necessary because we're in a global pandemic and it's scary stuff. So I think it's important that we have vaccines to help everyone. And I think it's something that should be tweaked, that should be changed, so we can get more compensation into people who are legitimately injured because of these very risky vaccines that are getting pushed through the system.
Well, John Groth, thanks so much for joining us to help us break down this topic a little bit.
Thank you.
John Groth is an attorney here in Milwaukee with Groth Law Firm. He spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski